got camping eyes and a fine lie. Last man in the shop is picking cauliflower. The fuss to make, I swear they were buying a car. I was moan, moan, it's not so cheap. Cheaper still down the street. Lose my rag and tell and take it back and shop down there. Closing down, they're closing down another road. One way.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Masters Review Podcast. This is episode 41. My name is Coleman. I'm not here alone. No, I'm with my partner in crime, no other than Charlie Flegel.
First podcast 2015.
Wow. Wait, no, I thought you said we did one in January.
No.
That was December.
The last one we did was December.
The winter meetings.
It's been just over a month.
It's like a whole new team we have presented with us.
It is. There's been some changes. There's definitely been some changes.
A lot of changes. But we'll go over that soon. I want to say welcome back to everyone, and thank you for listening. But what are you drinking? Because I am drinking Maker's Mark.
Nice.
And I'm having a dram of it.
That is amazing. That beats what I have.
Yeah.
I have a Ballast Point Even Keel Session IPA.
Wow. You are getting hardcore in the IPAs now.
No, this is leftover from New Year's. Mm-hmm. It's a session IPA. Session is the word. It's like my least favorite word associated with beer. It means like it's an IPA, but it's less alcoholic. So you can have it's like good for sessioning is apparently like the fancy way of saying drinking a lot of it.
Right.
Which it's like, I don't need a beer that's specifically designed to drink a lot. That's what Bud Light is. Like, I don't need a good beer that's specifically designed to drink a lot. So unless you're going to play beer pong with IPAs and you need Ballast Point, like, it's fine. It's not like it's a decent beer, but I don't need them to like tone down the alcohol on their IPA for me.
Right. Exactly.
So I'm enjoying it. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But it's not my favorite IPA. Let's just say that. Because it's a session IPA.
A session. So here we are. We are in January 28th, end of January. I think pitchers and catchers report in 3 weeks. Is that correct? Or is it 2 weeks?
It's about 3 weeks.
Yeah. So we got that going on, and we have had so many transactions. I don't even know where to begin. You have to lead us through this.
We begin with the transaction that my aunt made last week. She bought our tickets to go see the Nats in spring training when I go visit her.
Oh, so my gosh.
I will be at...
You will see Trey Turner?
I will see Trey Turner.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, it's interesting. So they live very close to where the new stadium is probably going to be built. They live in Jupiter, which is near West Palm.
Right.
But we're going not up to Space Coast, which is like 2 hours from their house.
Right.
We're going up to Port St. Lucie, which is like a half hour from their house.
Right. That's the Mets one, isn't it?
That's the Mets.
Oh, yeah.
And they're playing the Mets on Thursday and the Mets on Saturday.
You're going two times?
No, I'm not. She was like, can we get tickets to Saturday? And I was like, no, because Saturday's a split squad game.
Oh.
And I just have a feeling like all the guys that are definitely on the team will not travel down to Port St. Lucie. Like, so half the squad's going to be in Port St. Lucie and the other half's going to
be. So you're saying you're definitely seeing Trey Turner.
So, no, what I'm saying is we're not going on Saturday to the split squad game. We're going on Thursday when it's the starting team.
Gotcha.
So maybe I'll just chat with Trey as opposed to watching him play.
I love him. I just watch highlights of him when I'm bored now on YouTube. I just type in Trey Turner. And it's spelled T-R-E-E-A to everyone.
So let's start with that, because that was a trade that was actually made.
That was a genius trade. I bow to Rizzo for that trade.
Yeah, I think everybody agreed that was a great trade for them. I mean, so the trade was made on December 17th. Our last podcast was recorded on December 16th.
Wow.
So we haven't talked about it yet. So let's just give, you know, people by now know about the trade, but the trade for Trey. They got rid of a big fan favorite, right? They got rid of Clippard.
True. Which he's done as much as – I mean, the guy's great. He's going to excel on another team.
No, sorry. I'm screwing that one up. They didn't get rid of Clippard on the Trey Turner trade. That was a different trade.
Oh.
They got rid of Steven Souza on this one.
Oh, fine. I'm okay with it. He was much older. I mean, much older.
So the agreement on Souza that was across the board is he may be a good player. Where's he going to play with the Nats? Right? Like,
he's ready to play right now, and there's no spot for him.
Right, unless he could play center field, which he's not a center fielder. Mm-hmm. There's never going to be a spot for him. Like, they have their corner outfielder set for a little while. So, fine. So they get Trey Turner. Tell me about your – well, I'll tell you a little bit about
What I find amazing is that we don't really own Trey Turner right now. Like, he's starting starting spring training as a San Diego Padre.
Right.
And then I believe – what is it? Midway through the season, he becomes a National?
It's basically you can't trade a guy until 12 months after he signs or after you draft him or whatever it is. So they'll basically get him right around draft day this year.
So what is the incentive for the San Diego Padres to, like, work with him? That's the part I don't understand.
Well, so in terms of giving him – I actually tweeted at Keith Law about this.
Right.
And I was like, what's their incentive to – other than, like, not being deemed as a-holes, like, what's their incentive to actually honor the deal?
Correct.
And what he said was that it's a legitimate, like, contract. Like, it's somewhere it's signed that he's, like, the player to be named later. They just can't officially submit it or something. Like, it's official. It's just not officially official. So they can't back out of the Trey Turner part of it, which was my fear, is that, like,
right. It
would be like, they would turn around in 6 months and be like, oh, my God, he's even better than we thought. And right. We were backing out. They can't do that. They can't be like, pick anybody else, just not him.
But, I mean, like, what are the incentives for those hitting coaches to, like, really work with him when they know he's leaving? That's the thing I don't get.
Right. So I would say from a individual hitting coach perspective, what your incentive is that you want him to credit you down the road as being great, right?
Gotcha.
And from the team perspective, it's that whole, like, if we just let him atrophy as a player, like, we'll be looked upon poorly by the rest of the league with mistrust when we're trying to do other trades.
All right.
So I think there's a little bit – it's a little bit of the honor system.
Okay.
Right?
It's just a little weird. I didn't really understand it.
It is.
But I think we now have, obviously, the future shortstop of the Nationals, and we were able – and I think – top 10 prospect in the league right now.
So I don't know if I say he's definitely a top 10 prospect. But
have you seen his NZ's date video?
So here's what he's definitely good at.
Okay.
Running. He is amazing. He's an 80 speed guy. He's top speed, right? He's like, you know, think of like Billy Hamilton. Billy Hamilton's an 80 speed. Trey Turner's an 80 speed.
Right.
So he's incredibly fast. He's also unlike Billy Hamilton, who they moved to the outfield, they think he's a middle infielder. And a lot of people think he's a shortstop. Now, some people say, well, maybe he's really more like a second baseman because his arm isn't spectacular.
Right.
But, like, Keith Law thinks he's a shortstop. He thinks he's got more power than some people think and a better defensive player. So this was the number 13 pick this year.
Right.
Like, or this past year.
Because he was awesome in college. Yeah.
His what I read about his arm was it was an average arm, but it was accurate. So, you know, like, he's a small guy, he's a fast guy. Almost like think of the way like David Eckstein used to throw the ball from short. Like, it looked like he was putting all his effort into it, but in terms of getting guys out on throws, like, he was never bad at doing that. He might not have had the range of some shortstops. Like, I'm not saying this guy is David Eckstein. What I'm saying is that's what I'm picturing. Like, it's going to be a max effort throw, and maybe he's only a shortstop for 5 or 6 years. But, like, if he's their starting shorts, if he's got enough of an arm to be shortstop until he's 28 or 29, that's all they care about.
Right.
He's fast. He hit really well in low A last year.
Right.
Like, .369 batting average really well. And more power than people thought he had. That's obviously not sustainable. He's not a .369 hitter. But he was walking and he was hitting with power. And, you know, you think of, like, a middle infielder with speed and you go, well, he doesn't have any power. But if he's got enough power to even hit, like, 10 home runs,
20 home max. Runs, oh, you're thinking never get to that?
I don't think he's a 20 home run hitter.
You don't like, let me look at his. Yeah, I guess you're right. Now I'm looking at his stats. Never mind.
This is not 1998, right?
Yeah.
Like, a 10 home run hitter is pretty good. Nobody hits like over. There's very few people who hit 30 home runs anymore.
Well, guys use the cream, though.
Well, nobody uses the cream anymore.
I don't know. Maybe guys in the Orioles do.
Well, I did hear that A-Rod is now training with Bonds, which is like the greatest supervillain pairing of all time.
I love Barry Bonds. I don't understand. He'll never get in the Hall of Fame. He was like the greatest hitter ever.
I love Barry Bonds too. And
God, he was so good at hitting.
And
I'm sorry. I don't care how many drugs you could give a person to hit a fastball from numerous amazing people who can throw fastballs in the major leagues and still knock the ball out of the park, I still think is a phenomenal skill.
You know, I was reading on like Twitter or something. They were talking about him like pre-juicing days.
Yeah, he was great.
Well, he led the league in that time in intentional walks pre-juicing days. And then he blew those intentional walk numbers out of the water
right.
Once he was like
unstoppable Barry Bonds.
Yeah, 2000.
If you throw the ball in the strike zone, I'm going to hit a home run.
But he was so good even before then.
So
he was
good.
So good on the Pirates and when he first went over to the Giants. So good.
So good on the Giants.
So I'm kind of I'm kind of rooting for A-Rod now.
Right.
I just want him to like.
I want A-Rod to do well. Why not?
I think it would be funny.
Yeah. All right. So Trey Turner, I'm a huge fan. This is years in the. I'm talking 2 years before we'll see him even on the Nationals. I think
he's definitely not this year.
No way.
You know, it's like never say never. What happens if they? I doubt they're going to re-sign Desmond at this point. So let's say Desmond walks at the end of the year.
Right.
There's a chance we see Turner next year. I don't think that there's...
I don't know, man. That seems way early to me.
But I'm talking late next year.
All right.
I don't
if
think
it's late.
Like, you know, the chances of him... He would have to have a kind of year that you go, oh, my God, this is a top 10 prospect.
Yeah, like a Rendon comes in and does that.
He would have to have that kind of year in the minors this year for
right.
them to even, like, really consider him making the team out of spring training.
Right.
Because what they want... Like, he's fast and he can play middle infield, so... If you didn't care about his development, you'd be like, well, put him on the team coming out of spring training in 2016, and he'll be a base dealer, and he'll play some middle infield, and he'll get some at-bats. But no, what you want him to do is stay in Double-A or Triple-A and get five at-bats a day or four or whatever. So I'm guessing that's what will happen.
Right.
C.J. Whitman, who's Baseball Prospectus, one of their scout guys, said he's a 5+/5 at shortstop, which means he's like he sees him as a everyday guy with the potential to be like an occasional all-star.
Really?
Or called him a well, actually, he wrote that he's a 8-run, which is maximum run, 5+/5 at shortstop, which I think means defensively, actually. So they called him an average or better than average, potential 5 for hit and 4 pop. So this is on that 20-80 scale. He's just doing 2-8 instead of 20-80. He called him a roll 6 shortstop. So roll 5 is like major league starter. Roll 6 is like major league good starter and occasional all star.
Oh, interesting.
So, sorry, that 5+/5 at shortstop. I think
he's
roll 6 is overall. He's a 6. So. 6 out of 8 is pretty good, right?
Yeah, that's pretty. I'm impressed that it's that high already.
Right. 7 out of Well, this is what he's projecting.
Right.
7 out of 8 is like perennial all-star, and 8 out of 8 is like, you know, perennial MVP candidate.
Right.
So roll 6 is like, that's half the guys on the Nats now, right? And they're such a good team. Like, so, and he called him a long-term solution. So a lot of the scouts that I pay attention to think he's a shortstop. And you're in love with him.
So I'm in love with him, yeah. So that's great. So I'm going to just name some important dates that happened and some names that stick out to me.
But there's one more guy. They also got a right-handed pitcher who's 21 years old.
Oh, that's true. You love him.
Well, Joe Ross, people are talking about, and they said that...
We have so many pitchers. Pitchers don't impress me anymore.
Well, so C.J. Whitman, the same guy, also tweeted out that he's a potential 2 or 3 starter.
Whoa.
Now, he's not there yet, but he's a mid-90s right-handed pitcher.
Wow.
Topping out at 97. His secondary pitches aren't great, so...
So they're going to work on it. He's 2-3 years
it's
old.
It's one of those things where it's almost like if the secondary pitches develop, he's a 2 or 3 starter.
Right.
If they don't, he might still be able to move the 95, 96 closer. Mile an hour fastball. Yeah, bullpen guy.
Yeah.
Like, good bullpen guy.
Right.
So, okay.
All right.
So that was last year's trade, Coleman. Wait, let's move into
that. We have some signings, though, that happened before the new year, though. Some names, yeah. Some great names. Ready? Heath Bell now has a 1-year contract with the Nationals.
You know my feeling on Heath Bell.
I mean, to me, he's old and hurt. I don't care. If he makes a team, I'll be shocked.
If he ever makes a team, I'm going to start a Twitter campaign for Heavy Bells to be his theme song, the J. Roddy Walson song, because his last name is Bell, and he is 300 pounds.
Right. Ian Stewart was signed on December 23rd as well. I was a huge fan of him, but now he's old. And
I think I might have had him on a fantasy team one year, and then he hit like 12 home runs at third base in Colorado that year, and I was like, drop.
Basically, they're getting a whole bunch of guys either come in and help young guys, or maybe if they are amazing, make the team. Another guy, December 26th, Dan Uggla.
Keep in mind that they also have to populate a minor league roster.
True.
Right? And so if these guys want to show up for minor league camp and try and show something off, their injury insurance / AAA roster, right? These are guys that are not ready to hang it up. And so they'll play on Syracuse if, you know, nobody wants to sign them after spring training. Right. So some of it is just that, I think.
So December 26th, Dan Uggla joins the Nationals.
I spent a lot of time making fun of the Braves for starting Dan Uggla at second base.
Right. And now he's on your team.
Now he's on my team.
He won't make the roster. I don't think.
Although, if you want to dream big, do you want to dream big about Dan Uggla?
No, because then the next move that happens means he's never making the team.
Well, can I tell you why there's a possibility?
Okay, why?
So I have read that one of the reasons Uggla tanked so quickly. Now, there's two reasons that Uggla might have tanked so quickly.
Okay.
Reason one is he got old because his walk totals went up as his power went down and his strikeouts went up. So that happens with older power hitters. They lose power. They become more selective because they can't catch up with fastballs, so they strike out more, but they also walk more because they're not swinging at as many pitches. And it may have just been that Dan Uggla got old. He can't catch up to fastballs anymore, and he's not a guy with, you know, the bat to play in the majors. That's the possibility that I think most people assume.
Mm-hmm.
The other possibility that I read about is Dan Uggla got a concussion 2 years ago when he got hit in the head. And he said he still didn't feel right last year.
Wow. That could do a lot.
So you never know. There is that possibility that Dan Uggla is Justin Morneau and comes back and isn't quite the same player. Morneau was not the MVP candidate last year that he was when he was with the Twins, but Morneau was a good hitter.
Right.
After years of suffering from issues related to concussions.
I'm not a believer. I don't think we'll see him on the roster.
I mean, look, if I had $10, I would not bet that that was the case unless you gave me like 60-1 odds. But the point is, it may be something that Rizzo says, look, I've known this guy since I drafted him.
True.
He has a good reason for what he's saying. I believe that.
So we'll
if that's the case, he's still probably not their starting second baseman because he's so bad at playing second base at this point.
Right.
But what he is, if he can do that, he's a really good bench bat and occasional second baseman.
Right.
I mean, I can't imagine with the way Rizzo is addicted to defense, especially up the middle defense, Dan Uggla would have to be like a 40 home run hitter to play second base for Rizzo. That's my guess, which is never going to happen even if it was all concussion issues.
Right. All right, so then moving forward, now we can talk about Tyler Kleber leaving, and they bring in Yonel Escobar, shortstop, who I hear now is basically moving to second base.
So I wrote a pretty long post on this that I wrote two posts this year that got really good feedback. So I recommend everybody go read them because I don't often get feedback, and people really like them. So let me tell you what I wrote about this.
Okay.
That Escobar is basically, as most people know by now, he is there to play second unless they get rid of Desmond. Mm-hmm. Everybody's suspecting they'd get rid of Desmond. I'm not so sure about that.
No way.
I think it's Desmond insurance. I think it's to probably play shortstop next year if they can't find a better option.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, although his defense wasn't great last year, to move him to second, he's going to be a strong defensive second baseman. So
agreed.
I think – and he's a better hitter than Espinoza is going to be or most of the other options that they had. It's a pretty cheap deal for him. So I think it's a good deal. And he is one of those people that is – his range has never been good. It's not a good range. He's not a good range player even when he was – a plus defensive player,
mm-hmm.
but he's one of those guys that anything he gets to, he makes a play. He's really, really sure-handed. So that's good.
Yeah, no, I'm happy about it a lot. That's why when we're talking about Ugla, I'm like, well, now that trade just seals the deal. I mean, it's going to be a Desmond or Espinoza and Escobar, I think.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Escobar, his numbers aren't spectacular, but he's had a pretty – he has had over the last 2 years, which have not been great, but he's also been playing in Tampa Bay,
right?
Which for a lot of reasons makes hitters bad, including the park and the division and the team.
Right.
He's sort of been a middle-of-the-road second baseman, which mm-hmm. which tells you how bad second basemen are in the league.
Right.
His on-base percentage over the last 2 years is actually right above Daniel Murphy's. Of the Mets.
I'll take it.
Yeah, Murphy is, you know, Murphy was considered a really good hitting second baseman.
I believe he was an all-star, wasn't he?
He might have been. It might have been, though, but Murphy, like, had a ton of hits. Right. It's like, so anyway, he's had a four war season and essentially zero war season over the last 2 years. So what's he going to be next year? I don't know, but I think it's a good, solid, not a drag player for them to add, like a quality starter who's never going to make an all-star team but is not a hole in your lineup. So I like that.
Okay. All right, so now I have some one-year deals before we talk about the big deal that came through by us. We sealed up Ramos, we sealed up Storen, we sealed up Lobaton, Espinoza, Stamen, Strasburg, and Pfister. Any names or anything you want to talk about?
No, I mean, just it's always nice to see them not have to get to arbitration, because arbitration
right.
is a process where the team points at the player and says, this is why he doesn't deserve as much money as he's asking for. And it can breed some animosity.
Correct.
And what you don't want is the Nats standing in front of an arbiter telling an arbiter how bad Steven Strasburg is. Like, it's just not the kind of thing you want. So I'm glad that none of these guys had to go to that process.
Right. I'm happy about all the players. And
are you sad about Tyler Clippard leaving?
No, because we'll get to why. I was sad for, let's see, how many days is that? 7 days I was sad.
I was not sad.
Not even 7 days.
All right, so here's my take on Tyler Clippard.
Okay.
I liked him as a player.
Yes.
I actually couldn't stand watching him. He was one of...
Really? You'd be nervous when he was on the mound?
Personality-wise, one of the best guys on the team.
Right.
And he was a very good pitcher for them. Not spectacular, probably overrated because he's been very good for so long. Like, you get that thing where he's, like, consistently been really good for a long time.
Right.
That people start to think he's better than he is. That being said, there aren't that many – because relievers' abilities fluctuate so much season to season, there aren't very many relievers that have had the last 4 or 5 seasons as good as Clippard.
True.
But in none of those seasons has he been like, oh, my God.
Outstanding, right. Will he be a setup man or a closer?
He can close. He can set up. I mean, I find that the difference is negligible, right? Like, if he's a closer, he's not going to be one of the best closers in the league, but he'll be good. He'll be solid. He's also one of the guys that was nearing the end of his contract. He's basically led the league in innings over the last – or led the league in appearances over the last half a decade. So maybe it's not a bad idea to sell high on him.
I think it's great. I mean, we got a guy – we got a middle infielder for him, in my opinion. And that's better. We win, I think. All right, let's talk about January 19th.
Before we move on from that trade is, in the article, I did talk about some of the Escobar issues that I think – there, you know, he had like a slur written on his eye black.
Oh, great.
This was back in Toronto.
What was it?
Like,
against what race? With this?
No, it was like an anti-gay slur.
Oh.
But, I'm not going to defend what he wrote.
Right.
What he wrote is inexcusable. He should be
right.
not doing that kind
Someone
of
Someone in public, the public eye. I don't agree with it.
What his teammates, what other native Latin American players said, what a linguist interviewed by the Toronto Star said was, that word can mean a slur. It's also more like you play baseball like a girl. You're weak. You're a
woman. Oh, so there's a double meaning.
So, like, Omar Vizquel and Edwin Encarnacion were on the team with
Still, I don't like it.
They said they use that word all the time. It's not a slur. Right. So my right. take on it, this is what I wrote. None of it excuses
right.
what he did, and it should not excuse what he did.
Right.
Forgetting about the homophobic part about it, we've moved past the point, at least, you know, I feel like we've moved past the point where it's okay for a male athlete to be called out as being a girl.
Right.
Forget about the homophobic part. Like,
right.
It's just inappropriate for him to call somebody a girl,
right.
you know. That being said, if he's using the term that he thinks of as girly man, that's way different.
Way different than
him saying somebody, insulting yeah. somebody for being homosexual.
Right.
So I'm not saying he's not a bad guy. I'm not saying he's a good guy. I'm not saying any of these things. What I'm saying is there was a lot of talk by Toronto interviewers who wanted to dig deeper into it, as opposed to the rest of the media that just said he's clearly a horrible person.
Right.
That maybe it didn't mean what we said.
Well, he better play good second base. That's all I know.
Well, so what I wrote is whether he's a bad guy who showed what kind of person he really is, or he's a good guy from a different cultural background who made a legitimate
True.
Mistake based on a cultural divide and is truly sorry, I have no idea. And I think it's wrong for us to presume either way. Just like mm-hmm. it's wrong what he did, and he's an adult and he should be smart enough to have realized that it was wrong what he did before he did it, not after.
Right.
So I'm not excusing what he did by any means. I want to be really clear on that. But when you hear about him being a bad guy, just remember that a lot of the guys that we see on TV and get interviewed and seem like great guys really aren't. And a lot of the guys that are quiet,
Yeah, I'm just here not to get fined, boss.
Well, I mean, look, the first season Jason Worth was here, I thought he was the worst person that
they Oh, yeah?
Had. Not because of his numbers, but because he was, like, angry, surly, and awful.
Right.
And now I'm pretty sure he's, like, the best veteran in the clubhouse.
Agreed.
And some of that was because he had a bad season and didn't want to deal with the media. Some of it was because he got annoyed at himself early on in the season, didn't want to talk to the media. And so the media spent a year saying he's a bad guy. And then the next year they were like, well, maybe not, you know?
Right.
And so I just, when you hear about that stuff, take it all with a grain of salt and
True.
Understand that there's evidence that he may be a bad guy. There's also evidence that he may not be. And we just don't really know. He's got points against him for what he did.
Right.
That's all I can say.
So January 19th, the Washington Nationals signed Steve Avery, Greg Maddux, Tommy Glavine, John Smoltz. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Max Scherzer. So now the Nationals have the greatest pitching staff ever assembled.
Somebody wrote that they could never top the, like, 1971 Orioles that had, like, 4 28
Palmer
winners.
And all that.
And I'm like, that's not fair because they probably each started 42 games or
right.
something. It was a
right.
four-man staff.
Different
and
era.
So I'd say it's better because they have a six-man staff that is amazing.
Right.
Do
you think, first question, first, do you think this is going, we're going to the season with this amazing squad or someone leaving and Tanner Roark is coming in?
If you had asked me the day of the signing, I was like,
yeah, someone's gone.
Zimmerman or Pfister is gone.
Right.
The closer we get to, I mean, we still have a month and a half before spring training, or 6 weeks before spring training starts, 5 weeks maybe.
Right.
Maybe it's not. Maybe it is the team.
Wow.
It just.
It's unbelievable to me. Like every time you go to a Nationals game now, you're going to see like one of the greatest pitchers in the league.
Yes.
It's ridiculous.
No offense to John Lannon, who is a great player for this team, but like I remember going to games and being like, oh, I'm at a John Lannon.
Oh,
there's no
I'm at a John Patterson start.
Well, Patterson was kind of amazing.
No, I hated it.
We're like, I'm at an Esteban Loaiza start.
Oh, great. I'm at a LeVon Hernandez start. I'm going to see one pitcher all game.
I kind of love LeVon starts. But I think the point is, like, what are you going to complain about? Being at a Gio Gonzalez start?
Yeah.
Whatever. You're going to see nine strikeouts. Like,
right.
It's amazing. So, yeah.
I'm buying a jersey, first of all. Second of all, yeah, I fell in love with him in 2008.
Wait. So, jersey's a good investment, right?
Oh, because, all right, let's talk about contracts. On our team, there is no other player that you could get that has more years with the team than him right now. It's the best investment.
Except you could buy a Trey Turner jersey. But
you
won't know.
Could, but you don't know the deal.
You won't know what number he is.
Right. So, no, if you need a jersey this year, buy a Scherzer.
I want you to buy – forget the Scherzer. I want you to buy a Trey Turner jersey as soon as we figure out what number he's going to
win. But
like, when he gets traded – and he gets his minor league number, buy that jersey with that number. Go get a custom-made jersey.
But what if I get a Kill a Kill away? Or...
Oh, you were excited about that, huh?
I had him. He was another guy that I thought when I saw his tape and when he was in the minor leagues when we do our fantasy draft that I also hit a huge eye on. And I think I got him.
I just don't know anything about him.
He's a huge dude that's been in Japan for 2 years.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And if anything, he's there to play like a backup first baseman if they need to call someone up. Because they have who they need there now, but he's someone they could call up and fill in. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I guess so.
He's a lefty, too.
Oh, well, bring him on.
There you go.
More lefties.
But yes, we have Max Scherzer. That's the biggest thing. 7 year, $210 million contract. I believe he's in the top five of paid pitchers now in the league.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's one of the top five contracts of all time.
Right.
Although, so why do you think they signed him? Is there like, what was their motivation besides just they wanted?
Well, okay. What's his name? I'm an idiot. Our manager.
Matt
Williams was on Arizona in 2008. When we discovered him and saw this guy pitching and were like blown away by him.
Right. He is a Arizona.
He is an Arizona guy.
And I remember I was shocked when Arizona traded him.
Yeah. I couldn't believe it.
Isn't this
guy
supposed to be the next big thing?
Right. And then he showed out to be the next big thing on Detroit.
Took a little while, though.
He's here. He's a free agent. Why not get one of the best top 10 pitchers in the league on your team? And you don't have to worry about like when Strasburg's contract comes up or when Zimmerman's contract comes up. You have no worries now.
Yeah. I mean, he is.
He's your guy.
There is the issue of like never wanting to sign a 30-year-old pitcher to a 7-year deal.
Right. We'll get 5 years out of him, I think.
Well, I think we had this conversation. If you could get three Max Scherzer years and two like third or fourth starter years and then two of the years are crap, like that's still – you're probably happy with that.
And we need him right now when he's in his prime. Right now is his prime and we need him.
I have a feeling that part of the reason they signed him was actually the contract itself.
What do you
mean? They looked at this contract, and I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to articulate this the right way, Colm, so tell me if this doesn't make sense. They looked at the contract, and they said, we are not going to be able to – we need a new pitcher next year.
Right.
But we are not going to be able to sign somebody next year to that kind of deal.
And like, that guy has to be to replace a Strasburg and a Zimmerman.
Well, forget about that. They just wanted to sign a good pitcher next year. Because forget about Strasburg leaving. Next year, Zimmerman and Pfister are gone. Now, they could re-sign them. But they knew they weren't extending them, that the guys didn't want to listen to extension offers. So throw, at the end of 2015, throw Zimmerman and Pfister and anybody else into the pot of free agent pitchers. And they looked at it and they said, this deal – well, it's a $210 million deal, because so much of it is deferred, it's worth $150 million
in
today's money or whatever it is.
Right.
And they said, just from that perspective alone, we're never going to sign a guy of this caliber to a $150 million deal. So since we're not going to do it next year and we can do it this year, we'll do it this year, we'll be set next year, and we'll wherever the chips may fall, so be it.
Right.
So I think that – I think the contract itself might have been part of their motivation.
I agree with you 100%. I also believe it's a statement saying we're making a run at the championship this year.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't think they need that statement.
They don't need it, yes, but it's pretty huge. It's
how
pretty
much better are they? Oh. I don't think they're that much better with him.
You can't win a 5-game series now with them at all, I don't think. You can't beat them in 5 games if we put runs on the board.
Well, no, I think what every Nats fan should understand from last year is you just don't know what's going to happen.
Right, around that time.
In a series. It's so short. You could lose your first 3 games with all 3 of your pitchers pitching great if the other 3 pitchers also pitch great. Like,
right.
So I think there's a philosophy in baseball that's kind of like, let's get to the playoffs. It's a crapshoot once we get there, but let's get there. Mm-hmm. And let's make sure the team is good enough to get there a lot of years. Rather than saying, you know, let's go all in this year and sacrifice the future. This time, I don't think they sacrificed the future. I think they...
No, not at all.
Yeah, and they made other moves this offseason to help mm-hmm. build their minor league stable.
And if someone misses a start, we have Tanner Roark. Boom.
Well, that's why, you know...
Yeah.
That's why I don't think that they're significantly better right now. Like, Scherzer and Zimmerman and Strasburg as your top three, as opposed to Strasburg, Zimmerman, and Fister as your top three, maybe that's not that big of a difference, mm-hmm. like come playoff time. But obviously, over the course of the year, adding Scherzer makes them a better team. Does it make them a 104-win team instead of a 96-win team? I don't know. I don't think if it makes that much of a difference, but it makes them better. But I think they're also certainly able to trade one of the other guys right
all
now.
Right.
And I don't think it's like this move puts him over the top for 2015. I don't think it makes that much of a difference for 2015. I think it makes a difference for what their flexibility for the
interesting.
Future. And I think that's what's great about it. I also think, you know, if they were to then dump Zimmerman because of getting Scherzer, I think they got a better pitcher.
Right.
Who knows what they'll both be like 3 or 4 years from now, but I think Scherzer's a better pitcher than Zimmerman.
Right. I agree.
So, you know, I'm happy with the move. It was when they did it, I was kind of like, what? I
yeah.
Stan, but I get their logic after looking at it. So.
Right. And that brings us to our last move of January 23rd with Evan Meek. Signing. No, I'm kidding.
No, Evan Meek.
You like that? No, was this Wednesday? Today?
Today.
Oh, my gosh. I already thought that was yesterday.
Today. Wednesday.
Casey Jansen is immediately signed by the Nats to a great deal, and we have our setup, man.
Yeah, I mean, what a deal.
What a deal.
Price. It's $5 million for this year, and then...
And an option to
buy... No, sorry. It's $3.5 million for this year and $7 for next year.
Oh, okay.
But there's a $1.5 million buyout. So if they decide to only keep it... If he sucks this year, it costs him $5 million this year. Right. If he's good this year and they keep him next year, it's $10 million total.
So you can say goodbye to Rafael Soriano, who has not re-signed with the Nationals.
Yes, thank goodness
for that. And Drew Storen is now officially your closer, basically, with that move.
Just so you know, from 2011 to 2013, Casey Jansen's ERA was 2.46.
Oh, what's his
whip? ERA plus was 172.
What's
he was whip? He was mostly their closer. In 12 and 13.
Interesting.
In 11, he was not. He was more of a setup man. He got some amount of time to finish games. But last year, he wasn't so good. And he apparently there's all kinds of excuses about food poisoning or getting sick or I don't know what happened. He was weak. He lost weight, all this stuff. He had a good first half, a bad second half. ERA plus still 100, so he had a league average ERA, which is not what you want from your back end starter, but it's also not like, you know, a 5.5 ERA.
You know what's interesting here? This will be his second team ever.
Yeah,
the Nationals. Isn't that crazy?
He's been in the league for almost since 06. Years, like 8 years, and he's only been with the Blue Jays.
Yeah, so
he's
not
a fastball guy. No. He throws in like the low 90s, but he strikes out a lot of players, and last year his strikeouts dropped, and if they come back, that's a good sign.
From 2000, it looks like, from what I'm looking at, from 2010 to 2013, he was really hitting it. And then, like you said, like last year something happened.
So he didn't, he wasn't healthy last year, according to him, and his strikeouts went down. Now, we talked about the volatility of closers, like, or of bullpen guys. This could have just been a bad year. It's a small enough sample size that you go, well, maybe it was just a really bad stretch that made his numbers look worse. I don't know. We'll see. But it's a very good risk, right?
Well, he has my prototype. He's six, he's over 6'4". He's 6'4" or higher and over 200 pounds.
But he's not from Japan, so he's not.
No, that would be – no, well, that's superstar level. I'm talking solid play.
So there's – you know, there's some good articles. Fangraphs has an article called It's Just What Happened to Casey Jansen.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just talking about his strikeout rates going down. It's a good read. They're basically saying, like, very few pitchers have done what he's done in terms of the last two seasons and his numbers going down the way they did. It just doesn't happen. So they were like, it looks like a blip. And, like, they named, like, the six other pitchers that that happened to.
Okay, good.
And, like, some of them were, like, Takashi Saito, who was then great again, or Jason Hamble, who was then great again, and some of them were like Braden Looper, who wasn't. So it was kind of like he might be Saito or he might be Justin Miller, who was never good again. So to me, that's like there's not a lot of evidence of this happening, and there's not a lot of evidence of it being a good thing or a bad thing other than it was bad for 2014.
Right. What I like is he has similar stats to Mike Timlin. At this age. If he plays like Mike Timlin, I'm okay.
Well, wasn't Mike Timlin like always angry looking?
Always.
Is that the guy?
He was a great setup. Yeah, remember he set up that series with the Yankees?
He always looked so pissed.
All right. So good. Anyway, that just happened, so that's even better. We basically filled the need that we got rid of.
So Tyler Clipper got traded, and then you have...
I think it's a lateral move, in my opinion.
A potential closer guy, a guy that's been a closer for the last couple of years filling in for him.
Right.
They got their middle infielder of the future, whether it's a shortstop or a second baseman, we'll see. But a lot of people think he's a shortstop. They got their... superstar ace pitcher for the next 7 years.
Right. You got the jersey.
He's the whole time.
Right.
He's really good. And they got a probably at least a league average type starting middle infielder in Escobar.
Right. Oh, don't get me wrong. You have Ryan Zimmerman until 2020, so his jersey is number two. The face of the franchise.
That's a good point. The face is still there. I think we have to figure out a design for a Max Scherzer t-shirt because he's going to be on the team for a while.
We need a good saying.
I can't think of anything that rhymes with Scherzer.
It's a very hard name.
It's been a good month. I mean, it's literally been 5 weeks since we last did.
Not to mention, we probably have the number one prospect or pitching prospect in baseball.
He is... You know, I think all these guys are just starting to come out with their prospect lists.
Oh, what is he on it now?
But Giolito, even though he's not the top 10 guy, or the top guy, I mean, I think he's relatively considered the top pitcher.
Right. That's pretty impressive. You think we'll see him this year? That's another good one. We'll definitely. Who know? What if you go to the game where he pitches?
I don't think I was at. I was at Strasburg's debut, and I was at Harper's home debut, but not his actual debut in L.A. So Keith Law came out with his farm system ranking.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the last few years, the Nats have been pretty low.
Right.
He ranked them ninth.
Really?
And what he said, let me just read it to you because you can't read it.
No.
Nats system got a big boost this year when they kept their first-round pick and landed a good college arm, Eric Fede. So, or Fede, I don't know how it's spelled. But he fell because he blew out his elbow. So he's going through surgery now, and I think he's just starting to throw again. He says, then they added two top 100 prospects in exchange for Steven Souza. So that's the Steven Souza
Trey Turner?
Trey Turner trade.
I love that.
And trade. Joe Ross.
Wow.
See, you can't forget about him because he's also – they got another top 100 prospect in the whole minor leagues, according to Keith Law. So that's pretty good.
Wow.
And then he says they also are so set at the major league level, they won't have to deal much from their minor league affiliates. Just two of their top 10 from last year, Nate Karms and Steven Souza, are no longer with the Nats. So that means they kept most of their minor league is filled. They kept most of their prospects, and they added prospects.
Yeah, they did great. I'm super happy with those situations. I wish our football team
like two could do years this. Ago, they were talking about how the Nats have basically emptied their
minor league. Like, remember, they said there they was no like, one after not, Rendon. They said it was over.
Yeah, and everybody was saying, "Look, it's not a good system, but it's not the fault of the Nationals. It's not a good system because they brought everybody up, and good for them. They just have to rebuild." And yet, 2 years later, they're talking about it being a top 10 system.
Yeah, exactly.
And sure, you were talking about, are we going to see Giolito this year?
Yes.
No, but we might
not see end AJ. Of the year.
We might see AJ Cole this year.
You will definitely see him.
Now he's not the future number one that we thought he was when he first got drafted.
Three or four, though, I'll take.
Yeah, people are saying he's a three or a four, and a pretty solid bet to be that.
So, I'm okay with that. I want him to come in and like get a start here or there late in, or mid August. Just get in there and do work.
Bring him up
game.
In September when they've hopefully clinched the league by 15 games.
That's true.
And let him pitch a game or two.
I cannot wait. We are getting close. So
it's so close.
Is that all the news? Should we move on to the weekend event?
Super Bowl's almost over already.
The last game of the year between Seattle Seahawks versus the New England Patriots, where the Seattle Seahawks can win their back-to-back, or Tom Brady can show he's the greatest quarterback of our generation.
You know, I just can't remember caring less about a Super Bowl.
I agree. I don't care.
I just don't care. I mean, they're both really good teams, and like if I was really – if I was as into football as I am into baseball, I don't despise either of these teams. I dislike both the teams. I don't despise them. And so I'd probably watch for the basis of, like, watching a good game.
Right.
But I just don't care. Like, this
here's the matchup to watch. Because I've been reading about it, and it's supposedly Rob Gronkowski versus Cam Chancellor. And watching them be one-on-one with each other.
I will watch that, I guess, while I'm eating whatever dip.
But, you know, I almost don't want to watch it. The commercials have gotten to the point now where I'd rather just watch a playlist of them on YouTube than be annoying during the game. Is that weird?
So, I was actually watching the news today, and they said something interesting. They said that the reason that all the commercials are out now already, and you can basically watch most of them, is because they're like, it's genius marketing. They basically paid $4 million for this commercial, knowing that you'll watch that the entire world will watch it, not just at the Super Bowl, but like a week early and a week after.
Right.
So they're like, they get much more than the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I do. It's like, and then thinking about how long the halftime show to me is like, oh, what a waste of time.
Yeah. I mean, at least they, not that I'm a Katy Perry fan, but at least they've moved on from like 65-year-old rockers.
Right. Well, now apparently nudity is okay if you promise not to do it.
Wait, is Katy Perry going to be naked during
No, but wardrobe malfunctions.
I might watch the halftime show then.
No, sorry.
No, okay.
It's not happening.
Colm, you got to tell us, you and I were out in L.A. the same time.
We were. The funny thing is we didn't find out until we were both on a plane.
You texted me from an airplane.
Yeah.
You were on airplane Wi-Fi, and you were like, I'm flying to L.A. And what day did you fly? What day of the week did you fly out?
I flew out on a Wednesday morning. And I found out I was leaving on a Tuesday night.
Wednesday morning, and I was like, I am going to the airport in an hour to go to L.A.
Right.
And you were like, shut up. I'm like, serious. So I was there for work, and we didn't actually see each other. But you were there for something much more exciting.
Although yes.
Before you get into that, I will tell you, I found the greatest bar ever.
Did you?
I was wandering around an area on a waterfront, like near like a boat dock. just because I had never seen it before and I had nothing to do when I got in.
Right.
And I walked into the diviest dive bar. And it was the nastiest looking bar. It wasn't dirty. It was just like run down looking inside.
Right.
The crowd of people was like the most random multi-ethnic group I'd ever seen.
Really?
Including like dudes that look like bikers out of a TV commercial. Like this was LA. They might have just come from a shot, like a shoot where they were dressed up like bikers. I don't know.
Right.
But it was like the strangest mix of a crowd.
Uh-huh.
And they just had a whiteboard up with like 45 different beers.
Wow.
In different colors.
Oh, right. I remember you telling me about this.
They're like, if it's blue, it's $5. If it's red, it's $6. Wow. And they were all craft beers, and it was all amazing. And the entire time they played like Iron Maiden songs and other like old school metal. It was
so now your Spotify playlist is that.
Yes, it was amazing. But that was the highlight of my
trip. Yeah, I left my sister, who is on the McCarthy's on CBS Thursday nights at 9:30, which is on almost in 2 minutes. She said, "Hey, do you want to go to the People's Choice Awards?" And I said, "Well, of course I do." And I
and
got
she
on
said this to you like the day before you flew
out. Tuesday night at 10 o'clock. So then I went to the
find a date. You coming with me?
Yeah, so we're going. We went immediately to like Hipmunk and kayak, and I found a flight. And I only bought a one way out there and figured I'd figure everything out later. So I flew out to LA and went straight to Sony Studios to meet her while she was in hair and makeup and got to pretend to be a celebrity for an entire night. And I got to walk.
I saw you. I recorded E.
You did. I took over, if any of you can watch somehow, the E red carpet from that event.
If you somehow have DVR'd that.
If you have somehow DVR'd it. I take over the first 20 minutes of the show, and then later on around the 40-minute mark, I should pop it again.
You're standing in the back with the big dude from your show I saw.
Yeah.
It's easy to spot.
So, and then if you look on social media, I photobombed my sister's cast plus the guy from Blackish, Anthony Edwards.
That guy's in everything. What's his name?
Anthony Edwards, I believe.
Anthony Edwards.
Or Anthony Anderson. Anthony Anderson.
Yes.
So, yeah, it was cool. That by far, the red carpet event is – I wish everyone could do that once in their life because it is so cool. No one says anything to you if you act like you know what you're doing.
Did
it was great.
Did anybody say, like, who are you?
No.
They just didn't – they were like, he's not somebody I recognize.
And he's not somebody I recognize, and so I'm just going to assume he's someone.
Now, did people go up to your sister now that you're on ABC?
She would go down, like, each – and, like, get interviewed at every little stop. So I just got to hang out in the back while all the celebrities are walking by me and stuff. So I saw, like, everyone. And the only celebrities – I would say celebrities that, like, I guess, like, gave me – starstruck me.
Uh-huh.
Where I could, like, usually I can give a funny little remark back to the people.
Right.
Like, and I don't care. But Ellen and her wife, Portia de Rossi, when I turned around and saw them once, I couldn't think of anything to say and just, like, moved out of their way.
Well, I mean.
It was weird. I'd never experienced that before in my life. They were.
Was it because of Ellen?
I think Ellen is a huge star, apparently, in my subconscious.
So it's not because. Of Portia de Rossi.
No, I think I'm my eyes locked with Ellen, not with Portia.
Lindsay Bluth to me would be a bigger star. Like,
yeah,
that's more important to me. She was on my favorite. I don't know if it's my favorite all time, but that I loved Arrested Development.
Right, but I got to talk to the dude from Entourage. He was cool. He's like,
dude, like
the main guy. He's like a little bit shorter than me. And I ran over Melissa McCarthy. I stepped on her foot, and then we did a funny thing where we compared each other's feet, and I made her laugh.
Nice. She's and, a funny lady.
A very funny lady.
How do you feel about the Ghostbusters thing?
It depends how they do it. If it's, like, cheesy, I'm not for it.
I'm a fan of all four cast members.
Okay.
Who's directing it? I like that. It's two people from Saturday Night Live, Melissa McCarthy and Kristen Wiig.
We'll have to see about that.
I think they're all funny. My issue is, like, why do I want to watch a movie about something that had Bill Murray in it that doesn't have Bill Murray?
Right, right. He made that
so,
movie.
I don't know. We'll see.
Right.
I mean, I like the if it wasn't Ghostbusters and those four women were doing a movie, I'd be like, that's probably going to be a funny movie.
Right.
But I'm like, think it might be less funny because it's Ghostbusters without Bill Murray. I don't know. Maybe they'll surprise me and Bill Murray will be in it.
Oh, so here's my favorite part for everyone, too, is so when you walk into the main show, I walk in and I see Adam Sandler right there next to me and, like...
Did you, like, high-five him?
No, Robert Downey Jr., Captain America's there, and then I'm like, wait, what's going on here? Like, why didn't they walk the carpet? Like, right. They just came in some back door.
Oh, because they
And then
like,
they move us to the seats, like, way behind them, and I'm like, oh, okay.
That's got to be interesting, right? I guess some of those guys, like, they don't want to walk the carpet because they don't want to deal with it, but it's not necessarily an ego thing because, like, it's important for your sister to be on the carpet because not everybody knows her and not everybody knows her show. It's essentially advertising.
Right. But the show was, in my opinion, was not as enjoyable as I thought it would be.
Really?
I heard on TV it didn't translate very well either. The after party was not what you would think from an – like, basically an after party was like the first 15 minutes you come to like a social in college.
Oh, so it wasn't just a bunch of people doing coke?
No. It was basically an open bar and, like, buffet food everywhere, and then just everyone just gets their food and sits at tables, and there was barely any celebrities there.
If it was, like, college, it would have been all Beast Ice.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was. But it wasn't even, like, top shelf, like, Grey Goose or Puff Daddy Chirac. It was nothing like that. But I also got to go to a Laker game. That's my last little news. My first ever Laker game. They do basketball right there, let me tell you. It was super exciting.
Really? Did you see Jack?
No, he doesn't come to the games because they've been losing, apparently, is what I found out. Oh, I did see the biggest person, celebrity that was there was Chris Pratt. And
from Parks and Rec.
Parks and Rec. So
and
I saw him.
Star or whatever.
So that was cool.
And was Chris Pratt also at our buddy Ace's wedding?
He was. Before
so you had
he
met
was.
Him before.
Right. I was a best man, so he heard me speak in front of a crowd.
Well, I wonder if he looked at you and he was like, where do I know that guy
from? I wasn't going to be that guy. I'd be like, hey, you remember me?
It's so weird that we know.
Yeah.
It's so weird that you were out there because your sister's now on a TV show, and by the way, you saw the only other celebrity that you've met.
I've met. Isn't that weird? It's so weird.
And our buddy Ace is. His wife grew up with Anna Faris, right? I mean, that's how
correct.
They know it. Because she's a Baltimore girl.
Right, correct.
So anyway, that's random. Yeah. Anyway.
It was great. Everyone just do that once in your life and watch my sister's
show.
You're
ready to go back home and do no more award shows after that? Or are you take me to one a year?
I mean, as long as she doesn't have a boyfriend who is in the area, then I am available to do stuff like that. Because I'm really good at it now. And I help her immensely with stylists and makeup artists. I actually know something now about that because I
you're
pick
like
up,
her business manager, sort of.
In a way, because I've really helped her.
She has a real talent agent because she's an actual actor.
Right, but no one handles her PR.
You are her finance and business manager.
Yes, because, I mean, because she has to work with the right people, and those right people want to work with her and do different projects with her. So we're trying to, expand exposure.
Yeah, and she
exactly.
Where does she go to UNC?
UNC.
So she needs help with finance anyway.
All right. Big Ten team. You love it. Yo, the Terps, by the way, they're pretty money in basketball. Let's just talk about that.
If anybody follows me on Twitter that listens to this knows that for the last month I've essentially talked about whatever acquisition the Nats have made and Terps basketball all the time. And
they're gonna be great in the tournament.
You're
I'm just really
gonna
excited.
Have to deal with it. I'll be done in March when the tournament's over, but this year they're actually going to make the tournament, so I'm pretty excited.
They're making the tournament, and they're going to be – I think they're built for a tournament, the team is. It's a tournament team.
You know what? They're just – regardless of how good they do, and I'll have a different attitude if they do poorly, but like they're a fun team to watch.
Exactly.
They run. They shoot a lot. They can be really frustrating as a fan when they're missing their threes and stuff, but like in general
– they play big.
They're fun to watch. They play good defense, and they don't hold the ball on offense. They don't have the greatest half-court offense by any means.
I believe in Turgeon now.
I believe in Turgeon.
I believe.
Not as much as I believe in Mike Rizzo, though. And that's part of the reason why I'm excited for all the moves that we talked about, Colm.
We did.
Because you can throw some doubt into the Scherzer deal. Maybe it was too long. You can throw some doubt into some of these trades. But when they get somebody like Trey Turner, it's because Rizzo thinks Trey Turner is going to be their starting shortstop.
And I agree.
Rizzo has only given me reason to trust him.
Right.
he only wins trades. So I think Trey Turner is going to be good. That's why you should buy his jersey.
I cannot wait. Number three, A-Rod. All right, everyone. Thank you all for listening. Remember, go to thenationalsreview.com where you can find all the stories there, plus the podcast. Find us in iTunes. Listen to us on the site. Send us back your feedback at nationalsreview.
At culminations.
There you go.
Check out all the tweets about baseball and about walking the red carpet.
Yeah, there you go. Anything else? We'll be back next month. We'll do it. We're keeping this monthly till the season starts. So we'll be back in February.
Do a February podcast, and then maybe one before I go to spring training.
Yes.
Maybe one when I get
and then
back.
We'll be back. Exactly.
Excellent.
All right. We'll see you at the park.
See you at the park.
Crappy joke. Sit back, relax, and have a smoke. Mac the nap snakes, the kind of things that they are. Where there's more life, more life, more life. I am a tramp's best. There's more life, more life, more life. I am a tramp's best. There's more life, more life, more life. I am a tramp's best. There's more life, more life, more life. I am a tramp's best. Sharpest pick and cauliflower. Mac the nap swigs, a can of sings a day.